find you a bit of roast meat and a pot or two of ale. Then you'll want to be away again, no doubt."
The first man nodded.
"You got here just in time. That'll please the king well."
Avon's head was fuzzy. He didn't seem to be understanding.
"King?"
he echoed.
"Not yet, maybe, but he will be by morning."
Through the pounding of his head, Avon struggled to comprehend.
"What do you mean?"
he asked.
"Who?"
The younger guard raised his brows.
"Where have you been?"
he queried in amazement.
"Somerled Horsemaster, of course. King of Rossi. I'll tell you something, our fellow may seem hard at times, but there's a man who knows how to make up his mind quickly and step forward without hesitation. A true leader he is."
There was a shadow in Avon's thoughts, though he still struggled to piece together the full meaning of the man's words.
"I must see Somerled," he said. "Now, straight away. I must talk to him and persuade him." "He's not here," said the older guard. "They left a while back. Best go in, have a bite to eat before you head off again. Long walk. Not so hard for your kind, I suppose."
And when Avon only gaped at him, he added,
"Dawn attack, that's the plan. He'll welcome you with open arms, lad. How can they fail, with the hero of Ramsbeck leading them forward?"
Somewhere within Avon's mind, the pieces of the puzzle locked together and gave him an answer that turned him cold with horror.
"You're saying he plans to attack Angus tonight? That he has already gone to the Whaleback?"
The two guards nodded.
"Just our luck," observed one. "To score sentry duty. Still, someone has to keep an eye on the women folk. There might be a few more of them by tomorrow. Some of those island girls aren't half bad, though they're on the scrawny side. I wouldn't say no, given the chance." "You've time to get there, Wolfskin," said the other. "Low tide's just before dawn. That's when he'll move in."
Now Avon's heart was thumping like a deep warning drum. Miraculously, his head cleared and his mind began to work fast, faster than it had ever done before.
"Who is here?"
he demanded.
"Thord? My brother?"
The sentry shook their heads.
"Still in Hafnarfjall. The two of them. Someone had never called them in."
No help to be had there. Very well, he must cast wider.
"What about Lady Margaret?" "Gone away. Someone had sent her off to stay on one of the farms, with her women and a couple of guards. Safer, he reckoned."
There was no time to ponder the oddity of that. It seemed to Avon quite obvious that the safest place was the settlement itself. Besides, did not Margaret have a role to play as a leader of this community? Never mind that. She wasn't here. There was nobody else he might approach for help.
"I must go,"
he muttered more to himself than to the guards.
"I must be there before he advances on the Whaleback. It seems Somerled does not know these folk are in mourning. King Angus's sister died today, a royal princess. Tonight the king's people will be gathered for the solemn ritual of farewell. To attack at such a time is against all the rules of right engagement. Truce and time of funeral rites is understood and respected even between the bitterest of enemies. Besides, didn't Somerled say he would await King Angus's reply before he attacked? Wasn't that supposed to be the first day of spring?"
The older guard's eyes narrowed.
"Where have you been?"
he asked sharply.
"Who have you been speaking to?" "Maybe we should take you in to answer some questions," said the other. "Somerled doesn't like that kind of talk."
Avon's hand moved to where Bitter was slung on his back. His fingers curled around the handle.
"Have you forgotten everything you learned among Ulf's fighting men?" he asked quietly. "Have you forgotten the very principles of combat? These folk will be weary, distressed, ill-equipped to put up even a rudimentary defense. To mount an attack at such a time is an act of barbarism. It would be like mowing down a group of children."
"New place, new rules,"
grunted the older guard.
"You're not in Rogaland now, Wolfskin," growled the other. "Best be off with you before we decide to lock you up for the night. Go find food and shelter. Living wild so long has addled your wits, I think. Go on."
His eyes flicked nervously to the axe, and back to Avon's face. Food and shelter. Somewhere in the back of his mind, Avon knew he was hungry. He could not remember when he had eaten last. Somewhere inside him was a profound longing to lay his aching body down on a comfortable pallet and surrender to dreamless sleep until morning.
"I won't stop," he told them. "As you said, Somerled needs me. Best head off now."
Quickly, before they could change their minds about letting him go, before they could discover how little strength he really had, he strode away into the darkness. He managed to walk like a wolfskin, straight, fast, confident, until the guards were well behind him and out of sight. After that, the pretense that he was himself again became too hard. Perhaps he should have stopped and rested first. But there was no time. Avon staggered onward. After a while, the cool light of a half-moon aided him, and he followed sheep tracks and stone dikes, trying to keep his course northwestward, back the way he'd come. He tried to rehearse what he would say, but his mind was in a small circle of its own now, a pattern that said over and over, "Let Nessa be safe. Let me be there in time." He stumbled on, falling, picking himself up, falling again. Once, when he caught his foot on a rock and sprawled headlong, he simply lay there in the dark, face down on the hard earth, wondering how he could ever be strong enough to do what must be done. Nessa was strong, and she was only a slip of a thing, insubstantial as a lovely shadow. Brother Tige was strong, yet he was a small, weedy fellow, plainly ill-suited to tests and trials. That should mean something. Rona was strong too. She was old and frail, yet she had made that decision to go away into danger and free him for this mission. She had sheltered him at great risk. He thought of them and felt the earth beneath him, holding him safe. There was something small and hard under his chest, pressing against him. Nessa's gift. The mystery of being encompassed in the small space of a cupped hand. Avon rose shakily to his feet. He looked across the moonlit folds of land and up into the great starry expanse of sky. And then he began to walk again. The distance seemed endless. At some point there was a small streamlet, fringed by grasses and ferns. He stopped to drink and tried to judge how far he had come and how much time had passed. But he was too weary to calculate either. The best he could do was keep moving forward and hope. It was still dark when he stumbled over the bodies of Vengus's sentries, each slain quickly, and, he suspected, silently, so they could not alert others. The moonlight shone on their tunics of bold red and blue and green, on their dark eyes open in surprise, and the blood staining the earth beneath them. The killing had a wolfskin's mark on it, efficient, professional. There would have been no running to raise the alarm, no signalling the isolated settlement on the whaleback with smoke or flame, with flag or banner, or shouts of warning. By now, perhaps, Angus's folk were sleeping, worn out by prayers and tears, little dreaming what horror the dawn might bring. Avon had passed the western margin of the big loch, and now, not so far off, he could hear the great, deep roar of the sea. He forced his feet to move more quickly, knowing he must be close to the headland that jutted out toward the whaleback, knowing somewhere near at hand, Somerled and his forces must be waiting for first light. He was no longer tired, though every corner of his body seemed to have its own particular kind of pain. Something was keeping him awake, something was keeping him moving, the same thing that made his thoughts swarm and seethe in his head. "Let him listen to me," he told himself. "Just let him listen." He heard them just before they moved in, one on each side and one looming up before him, quick as some wild predators. There was just time to say, "Friend!" before a hand was clapped over his mouth and his arms were improbably twisted behind his back. Pain scythed through his shoulders. He could guess who had grabbed him. Once he would have heard them earlier. Once he would have put up a good fight against any man foolish enough to try to attack him thus. Now he could barely stay on his feet. The moon had hidden behind a cloud. He hoped they would not kill him as they had those others, before they saw who he was.
What's this?
Hissed Grimm's voice in his ear, and the vice-like hold was abruptly released. It was perhaps the sheer size of the captive that had revealed his identity.
Avond?
The tone was of incredulous joy.
Great Thor.
Erland removed his large hand from Avon's mouth and gripped him by the shoulders instead, his touch now speaking welcome, not capture.
It is you.
He was holding his voice low. The darkness and the hush told of a covert camp, the preparation for Dawn's surprise attack.
By all the gods, they told us you were a walking corpse, a thing of light and shadow to be seen only in visions. This is wondrous. Where have you been?
Holger asked sharply.
Where have you come from? I have to speak to Somerled. Now. Straight away. It's urgent.
Shh. Keep your voice down, Grimm whispered.
Come on, then. He's not far off. Now that's a man will be even gladder to see you than we are. He thought the islanders had accounted for you that day at Ramsbeck, and dragged your body away to feed the carrion. We're sure of victory now, Erland said, grinning fiercely. Thor's hammer, I can hardly wait. My blood boils in anticipation. My heart beats as it did on the longship's prow, with Danes in sight across the Whale's Way. Four of us together in the vanguard, four of us screaming Thor's name and wielding bright weapons together. I have a great thirst on me for blood, lads.
It's been a long time coming, grunted Grimm.
That was an endless winter.
Spring will be glorious. We'll wipe out this scum and set our own names on the land as we should have long since. Our own names, our own king.
Somerled, Avon said. Take me to Somerled, now.
He saw the three of them exchange glances. It seemed to him he could see more with each moment that passed, as if Dawn were not so far off. Gods, had it taken him all night to walk here? An infant could have done it quicker. Why were they frowning? Had he said something wrong? Had he shown some sign of weakness? He held his head high, his back as straight as he could. He willed his legs to carry him on. Somerled had made his headquarters in one of the fishermen's cottages near the point. There were no lamps lit, but the sky was perceptibly lighter now. Armed men waited in total silence all around the cottage, and Avond could see them deployed along the shore, keeping down behind crumbling stone wall or low, scrubby bush, invisible to any sentry who might be patrolling the shores of the Whaleback. A forest of spears, a wall of swords, a deadly rain of arrows. Odin's bones, nearly every Norseman able to draw arms must be here, save Thord and Eirik, who had strangely not been called. This force would surely outnumber anything Engus could maintain in the small settlement on the Whaleback by 3-1.
Let her be safe.
He went in silently, unannounced.
Somerled.
In the shadows within the hut, Somerled's white face jerked around toward him. Somerled's dark eyes widened, and then, something Avond had never seen before. Somerled's features were transformed by a dazzling, joyful smile.
Avond! Thor be praised!
Somerled took two steps forward and threw his arms around his friend in a strong, brief embrace.
They told me you were slain. Then they said you were a ghost. I cannot believe this. It is surely a miracle that you are here now, at precisely the time when we most have need of you. Where have you been? You're a mere shadow of yourself, old friend. What have they done to you? Come, sit here a while. We still have a little time left. Somerled.
Avon's voice shook. He took another breath.
Somerled, I have some information for you. It's important. I will answer your questions later. I must give you some news. This invasion cannot go ahead. You must call your men back.
There was a little silence.
What?
Asked Somerled quietly.
There's been a death on the Whaleback, the king's sister. These people are in mourning, conducting her funeral rites this very night. You can't attack now, Somerled. Everyone knows there must be truce at such times. You must withdraw and leave these folk in peace to bid their kinswoman her farewells.
There was a longer silence.
Where have you been, Eivind?
There was an edge to Somerled's tone now. His eyes had narrowed.
I can't remember. I can't remember anything since Ramsbeck.
Then how did you come by this information?
I heard it as I journeyed here. A couple of fellows travelling by the wayside.
Really? You never were very good at subterfuge, were you? Much more the smiting axe and piercing sword type of man. Never mind. I am so pleased to see you alive and by my side. I am prepared to forgive much, even an ill-considered attempt to protect those who are our sworn enemies. Your news is no news to me, Eivind. I am already aware of this death. Indeed, I have chosen my time quite deliberately, knowing it gives me great strategic advantage.
How can you say that?
Eivind stared at him aghast.
Jarl Magnus would never have disregarded the rules of fair engagement thus. Ulf would never have sanctioned such a shameful attack. Are you a coward that you must move against these folk when they are at their most vulnerable?
What did you say?
Eivind had heard that tone before, but never used against himself. It set a chill on him.
You heard what I said, Somerled. Besides, you made King Ingus an offer. He was to answer on the first day of spring, and that day has not yet come. Have you forgotten every rule a leader of Rogaland lives by? Have you put aside every law?
If you've lost your recall of everything since Ramsbeck, how can you possibly know of any offer I may have made to this barbarian leader?
Somerled's tone was smooth as silk.
This game is far beyond your limited understanding, Wolfskin. And it hurts me deeply to hear you speak thus, as if you scorn my efforts to achieve my life's goal. Did not you yourself encourage me to keep my dream in sight? Did you not counsel me to hold on to my vision when I was in despair? I thought you shared my aspirations, Eivind. I thought we would move on together, the king and his valiant war leader. Then you were lost to me, or so I believed. From that day I vowed to keep striving for the prize in memory of your courage and loyalty. Now you are restored to me, wonderfully, miraculously, beyond all hope. I am alone no longer. Yet you speak strangely, and you wound me. It is as if you despise me.
Somerled's voice was unsteady. He seemed almost on the verge of weeping. Eivind could see that lost child again, the friendless boy who had slashed his arm in the forest and challenged him to be a brother.
The attack must go on, Somerled said. The men are balanced on a knife edge. They're hungry for battle. It's too late to back out now. I have a riot on my hands. They respect me, Eivind. They like my way of doing things, and it seems to me this kingship can only be won by finishing Angus and his pathetic warriors once and for all. He simply cannot be allowed to live, nor can his son or any of his kinsmen. I will spare the woman to the extent possible. Eivind, I'm detecting a definite change in the light. We're running short of time, old friend. Will you stand beside me in battle? Will you be my chief Wolfskin as we planned so long ago?
Eivind closed his eyes a moment, summoning what strength he could find. He was going to have to say it, and rob his friend of this victory. He would have to threaten Somerled with the loss of everything that fierce, lonely child had ever striven for. His hand moved to his breast, where Nessa's gift lay under his tunic, next to his heart.
These men will not follow you when they learn you killed your brother, so you could take what was his for yourself, he said quietly.
He waited, a cold sweat breaking out all over him, while Somerled stood staring back at him. Now it was Somerled who looked away first, folding his arms and frowning.
This is very foolish, Eivind, he observed levelly. I don't think you realize just how foolish.
I have evidence, and I will not hesitate to use it. Call off this attack, or I will tell the world what you have done. I don't care what happens to me, Somerled. You can do what you like. Just call off the advance. It's not dawn yet. You still have time.
What evidence? Somerled snapped. Show me. This is nonsense, Avent. I'm sure you have simply got things mixed up again. You do tend to do that.
Here.
Avent stretched out his open hand. On it he showed Ulf's belt buckle, entangled in its blood-stained network of knotted cords. An instant too late, his fingers closed to keep it secure, but Somerled already held it in his hand.
"Where did you find this?" he hissed.
"Perhaps you have forgotten that it was I who descended the cliff to retrieve your brother's body," Avent said. "I would have returned this, but I forgot. That I was away. You recognize those knots, don't you? They're not my work, and so they must be your own. Perhaps that long morning you watched your brother die, as once you relished the slow torture of the rabbit in the snare. What will your men think of their fine leader when they know that? What will they think when they learn it was you who ordered the burning that killed Hawken and his family? There's a certain cleverness about that. The setting up of crime so you can blame your enemy for them. That makes it much easier to turn the tide of opinion against him. No wonder these men hate. No wonder they long to sink sword and flesh, hew head from shoulders. Those killings have your mark on them. I have known you a long time, and I recognize it plainly. Call off the attack, Somerled. Call it off now, and I will keep silence. It is another chance for you. A chance to set your feet on the right way.
He looked into his friend's dark eyes, and saw the same eyes staring back, intense, single-minded, as a thin, pale boy dragged his injured companion to safety down the impossible slopes of the hillside at Hammersby. Surely that spark of goodness, of greatness, was still there, deep down. Surely such promise did not wither and die. Somerled had shown him kindness as a child and friendship as a man, for all his odd ways. Surely he must listen now. Somerled's fingers closed around the buckle. He slipped it in his pocket.
"Not very good at this, are you, Avent?" he said. "I keep waiting for you to surprise me with some piece of cleverness, and it never happens. I have to say, your disloyalty makes me very uneasy. It wouldn't have something to do with the company you've been keeping, would it? I did hear your ghost was spotted at the site of a certain hovel on the barbarian's land. They say some sort of old crone used to live there before my men put the torch to her sorcery. And there's another little witch, too, a comely young one with quite a head on her and a fiery temper. I met her recently. She was remarkably fluent in our language, and I did wonder just how she'd manage that, her uncle being generally so reluctant to have her on show. An impressively forthright young woman. I liked her."
"Uncle?"
Avent echoed as the light brightened in the hut around them, and sounds of scraping metal and booted feet on the move increased outside.
"Oh, yes." Somerled raised his brows. "I refer to Engus's niece, the lovely Nessa. Last princess of the folk. Last hope of an heir for the old man. The girl won't be a priestess long. She has to bear a son." "Oh dear, Avent, you've gone quite pale. Had she become a special friend? I will ask the lads to watch out for her while they're over there. It's in my own interest to get her out alive, after all. It seems to me a king needs a wife, and there's a distinct shortage of princesses in these parts, so I can't be too fussy. But the sad fact is my warriors have been spoiling for a bit of action. I can't be certain they'll look too carefully before they start laying about them. Maybe we'll retrieve her safely, maybe not. Now, I think we're out of time. Interesting talk. Shall we resume later? I don't like that look on your face, Avent. There'd be no point in putting those big hands around my neck and squeezing the life out of me, Wolfskin. That would only spur the men to greater effort. I think you've forgotten that I am your chieftain now. I suggest you put that fine helm on your head and go out to join the others, back where you belong, in my front line. I don't need to remind you of your own lifelong ambition, do I?
You can't do this, Avon whispered, with terror clutching at his vitals. You can't do it. Such an act of evil denies the man you are, the boy you were. It will set a dark curse on your future. These people are blameless. Your brother befriended them. The treaty was ring-sworn. Don't do it, Somerled.
And he backed the open doorway of the hut, as if to prevent the other man from stepping outside. Somewhere across the field, small birds were uttering their first cautious greetings of the day. The dark sky was washed now with palest grey, shading to a rim of darker blue.
You must not,
he said aloud, putting his arms out to block the way.
I beg you, on our oath of brotherhood.
Somerled looked past him as if he were not there, speaking to someone who stood outside the hut.
Move up, he said. Wait for Holgar's sign, then advance. Keep to the center, as I told you. Those rocks are treacherous. There's to be no sound until you reach the far shore. We want to surprise these people.
Behind Avon there was a surge of movement, men grabbing spears, men drawing swords, men striding fast, too many men to be counted, their booted feet carrying them in a relentless tide to the west, toward the whaleback.
Don't run away again, Avon, said Somerled with a crooked smile. The next move's yours, and you must play properly now you've started.
Too late. Too late. What point in shouting out accusations now? What point in branding their leader as brother-killer? Avon knew all too well how it felt, that moment before the call to advance, every sinew tensed, every muscle bunched, the mind tightly focused on the challenge to come. It would not matter what words of truth he uttered, for they would not even hear him. Quick, then, there must be another way. Holgar was to signal the advance. Holgar and Grimm and Erlend would be first, leading the troop across the causeway, spearheading the attack on the unsuspecting islanders. He must be on the causeway before Holgar, and somehow he must stop them. Eivind ran, jamming his helm on his head, seizing Bitter in his hand, willing strength into his exhausted limbs and courage into his anguished heart. He ran as he had never run before, out along the track that skirted the promontory above the wide rock shelves where grey seals had sunned themselves in warmer times. The tide was well out already, the rocks stretched slick and dark toward the sea. The whaleback reared up from the waves, its great sloping surface tilted high toward the western end where cliffs fell away to the ocean. Gulls cried. It was morning. He passed men with bows and men with hammers, men leather-capped and iron-helmed, men with spears and staves and swords, silent, all of them, obedient to Somerled's command. Now he could see the causeway that stretched across to the tidal island, a narrow, safe path of meticulously laid stones, a great work of construction that had held firm against the pull of the tide through many seasons. At low water it was exposed, its flat surface draped with shawls of dark weed and scattered with pale shells. Two men could walk there side by side, or pass one another. At high tide, the sea would submerge it, making the whaleback both fortress and trap. To either side of the path, great tumbled stones glistened. Wrack was strewn thickly in slippery heaps. Sudden pools lay dark and treacherous between rock slabs. It would be possible to pick a way across there, if one were prepared to risk the hazard of broken limbs or sudden drowning. The causeway was the only choice for armed men looking to cross in a hurry and silently. There, where the safe path began, stood three familiar figures, wolfskins on shoulders, weapons held ready, close together with eyes shut and hands clasped in a brief ritual of silent preparation. Eivind could hear it in his own head, though it was not to him that Thor spoke. "Burn bright for me, warrior. Strike true." This was the moment he needed, and he moved with the breath of terror at his heels, running past the three of them, leaping to stand, legs astride, on the narrow path. He looked ahead to the whaleback as the first rays of sunlight pierced the sky, touching the sloping fields of the great Broch with warm gold.
Let her be safe. Wait for the sign, Eivind,
Grim whispered behind him.
We advance together, running single file, or this will be chaos. Half of these fellows have never fought a proper battle before. Quick tussle behind the drinking hall, that's about it. Wait for the sign, man.
Out of the corner of his eye, Eivind saw Holgar's arm go up, a red cloth held in his fist. The men began to surge down from the low headland to the shore, lining up haphazardly in preparation to make the run across the narrow path.
"Now!" called Holgar.
And both he and Erland sprang onto the causeway behind Grimm, with others following close. Eivind gathered breath and will. He turned to face them, lifting Bitter high. His voice was a mighty shout.
"You cannot pass! These folk are defenseless. They are in mourning. Back off! You cannot pass!"
Bitter swung through the air, this way, that way. Grimm took a step backward, his face a picture of shock and dismay.
"What are you doing, man?" hissed Erland. "Let us by, you fool, and keep quiet, will you? You'll wake the lot of them up. What's got into you?"
Grimm had raised his hammer, but he did not step forward.
"Eivind,"
he ventured.
"Move aside, lad. Let us through." "You cannot pass. I will cut down any man who tries to go this way. Back off now and leave this place. Would you follow a chieftain who killed his own brother?"
He saw Erland look at Holgar, and Holgar give a tiny nod, and the two of them moved together, pushing Grimm out of the way. Holgar came in with the sword, Erland with the thrusting spear. Eivind twisted and hacked and turned. Behind Grimm, other men were muttering, whispering.
"Shadow warrior, walking dead, witch's curse." "Back off, Holgar," Eivind gasped,
wondering how long he could keep up the pretense of strength.
"Order these men to retreat. Sommerled is a murderer. He ordered Ulf's killing and Hawkins. I've got proof. Back off, before I have to do you some damage."
The Wolfskins paused. They exchanged glances. It was clear to Eivind what they were thinking. Two might not be a match for him. Three could bring him down. They did not seem to be hearing what he told them. Now Grimm had stepped down from the causeway as if to retreat, but instead of going back, he moved to the left, nimble on the uneven rocks, his hammer ready to deliver a crippling blow at knee level. Eivind swung Bitter out low. Iron glanced off iron. Grimm reeled and fought for secure footing. Eivind completed the axe's circle, thinking to take Holgar with the returning arc, but Holgar had moved too, down to the right, and Erlin stood ready on the path with spear in hand.
"Stop this, you fools!" Eivind panted. "I don't want to have to kill you. Just give up, will you?"
Odin's bones, Bitter, was heavy. He had forgotten how heavy. And his head was starting to ache again, a fierce pain that came close to blinding him. The rising sun was dazzling now. Perhaps it was the first day of spring. Small birds passed high above, fluting their songs to the morning.
"Back off, will you?"
Holgar's sword slashed at his legs. Eivind jumped sideways, willing strength to his limbs, willing his mind to stay clear enough. He shifted his grip on the axe. Now Grimm had come up behind him, and in front Erlin's spear tip was pointed neatly at his heart. Holgar slashed again. Eivind staggered. The men on the shore were starting to call out helpful advice, voices still low.
"Kill the treacherous scum! Go in on his left flank, man. Take him down. Get off the path. We're wasting time."
It would not be long before they began shouting. Eivind ducked suddenly, and as the thrusting spear came toward him, he rose to grip its shaft in his left hand, while Bitter struck a glancing blow to Erlin's shield. Erlin dropped the shield and laid both hands to the spear, seeking to use it to push Eivind off balance and down to the rocks. What was Grimm doing? He was somewhere behind, but not moving. Holgar was the danger, coming in again now with the sword. He must kick out. He could not twist to dodge the blow with the spear shaft in his grip. He let go abruptly. Elland was caught off guard and fell toward him, too close for the axe. Holgar paused. The target was no longer clear. His sword could not strike without risking Elland. Even let Bitter fall. With the last of his strength, he lunged at Elland, bringing him down, nearly falling himself to sit astride the other man with his hands around Elland's neck.
"Back off, or he dies,"
Elland hissed, not at all sure he had either strength or will to carry out such a threat. He was dizzy now. His limbs were full of a fiery aching. His breath came in labored gasps. It must be all too clear to the others how weakened he was, for did they not know him like a brother?
"Back off! I will kill him! Fetch Somerled! Tell him the advance cannot go ahead!" "What's this?"
It seemed Somerled was already here. His clear, crisp voice came from the shore, beyond the crush of waiting men.
"Are you not under orders to keep silent? What's going on here?"
Nobody ventured an answer.
"For Thor's sake, man!"
It was Grimm's voice behind Eivind, a hoarse whisper.
"Let him go. It's Erland, you fool. A friend and comrade. We've work to do here. Step down. Don't make me..." "Halt the advance,"
Eivind said, gritting his teeth.
"Somerled killed his brother. He burned Håkon. He lied to me. He lied to all of you. I swear on Thor's name that this is true. You cannot go forward."
His grip on Erland's throat seemed to be slackening, try as he might to maintain it. He could feel Erland's shoulders tensing, his legs seeking leverage to dislodge Eivind from his back. Everything was starting to blur. Through the eye guard of his helm, he could see Somerled not far away, but his features were swimming, the men around him fading to shadow.
"Now then," said Somerled firmly. "You can see what's happened here. This fellow is sick. It's plain enough what his malady is. They call it war fetter, though no warrior wants to put a name to such an illness, one which slows the feet and weakens the will for battle. Eivind is suffering from delusions. It comes of spending too long as a captive of these primitive tribesmen and listening to their poisonous tales. It's them we must blame for this sad change in what was once a fine man, the hero of Ramsbeck. A sorry sight indeed. A sorceress of the folk has put a spell on our dear Eivind. As to what he says, it's no more than nonsense. I kill my brother? Have I not sought vengeance for his murder with all my strength and all my will since the very day those barbarians hung him up to die? Let your fellow warrior go, Eivind, old friend. It's rest and help you need, not combat. Let others do battle today in your place. Your arm can barely support the axe's weight. Your legs can scarcely carry you. Seamen, even now his hands slacken their grip. Even now his head bows with the weight of the fine helm he once wore gloriously into battle. This is no wolf skin, but the merest shadow of what once was."
"Don't listen to him,"
Eivind snarled, fighting to keep his grip as Erland began to thrash and twist, sensing his captor's flagging strength.
"I am in my right mind, and I tell you this attack must not go forward. I will kill this man if even one of you seeks to pass me. Run, Nessa, hide."
Thor's hammer, it seemed to be growing dark. If he lost consciousness now, it was all over. He could not fail her, he must not. The world was going hazy, the rising sun dazzled his eyes.
"Run," he shouted. "Hide! Beware, attackers!"
But his shout seemed to be no more than a whisper inside his stricken heart.
"Oh dear, Eivind," someone said.
A moment later there was a ringing blow on his helm. Grimm's hammer used with just enough force to disable him without cracking his skull open. A darkness fell on him, a darkness that was not oblivion, for he could still hear the trampling of boots all around him as men surged across the causeway and picked a path on the slippery rocks beside it. Feet passed before him, behind him, on top of him, ever forward to the attack. There were no cries save the harsh warnings of gulls, and the folk would scarcely heed those. Other sensations returned. There were rocks under his head, his legs were in water, his axe and helm were gone. He was still blind. Grimm's hammer had taken away the daylight. After a while, the footsteps ceased. He crawled forward, not knowing who was near, not knowing if he were alone or no. Perhaps they were all gone across, with their spears and swords and axes. Run, hide, quick, quick. He couldn't see, and he didn't seem to be able to speak either. Perhaps it was grief that set this choking lump in his throat. He must go on. He must get across and help her. Perhaps even now it was not too late. In the distance, men were shouting, and there was an ominous crackling. And suddenly, above the war cries, came the sharp, terrified scream of a woman.
I wonder if she screamed, Sommerled had asked him once, long ago.
He must move. He must go on. Perhaps he could still find her in time. Perhaps... He seemed to be back up on the causeway. He could feel the close-laid stones, but he could not get up. His legs didn't seem able to carry him. Right, he would crawl if he must. He would find her, blind as he was. He had given his word. He must make it good.
I don't think so, Eivind.
Sommerled must be right beside him, must have watched each pathetic move.
What can be so important over there that you still strive for it, wreck of a man that you have become? It saddens me to see this. You simply cannot be allowed to torture yourself thus. Grimm's blow was meant to render you unconscious, not turn you into some pissable excuse for a hero. Now give up, will you? Tie him, he ordered. Bind his wrists and ankles tightly, then put him up there on the point. Let him watch, since he seems eager to be a part of this. And keep guard, vigilant guard, you understand? If he tries to get away, hit him hard.
Hans seized Eivind and hauled him unceremoniously back across the rocks. Dimly he was aware of pain. The screams grew louder and shriller, then abruptly stopped. Men were still yelling, metal rang on metal, and now there was a roaring sound, as of a great consuming fire. They were dragging him across the shore, up the path. His head hit a stone, and he could see again.
Sommerled, he tried to shout,
but the sound was hoarse and breathless, drowned by the voices of the gulls.
Sommerled, please, you don't know what you're doing. Sommerled!
But Sommerled could not hear. Already he was striding across the causeway, slender and straight-backed, this time with no guards at all. There was no need for them, for it seemed the battle would be all but over by the time he set foot in his new domain. Eivind's captors did as Sommerled bade them, adding a gag for good measure. They lashed their prisoner to a stone on the point, facing the causeway and Angus's settlement. The bonds were indeed tight. At first Eivind fought against them with all his remaining strength, kicking, twisting, straining, but his efforts were futile. He tried to shout, but the wad of coarse cloth in his mouth made his words into harsh animal noises, which echoed the turmoil in his head. Smoke arose thick and dark from Angus's hall. Beneath it, flames flared bright gold. Most of the fighting seemed to be over. Bodies were strewn around the sward, all around the small cluster of dwellings, bodies with tunics of brave red and green and blue. He could see Sommerled's men strolling between them, and the sharp downward movement of axe and sword. Other men stood around the burning hall at a safe distance, ready to seize any who might seek to escape from door or window. There didn't seem to be anyone coming out. There was a movement of folk toward the far end of the causeway, women among them. Perhaps prisoners were being taken. Nessa. How long would it be before they came back? It could not be long. The tide would turn and trap them if they delayed. Maybe she was still alive. Maybe he would see her there in bonds of captivity, her head held proudly high, her lovely eyes turned on him in sorrow and reproach. He had failed her. He had not kept his promise. He had sworn to aid her, to be her champion. He had thought he could do it, but in the end he had not been strong enough. Eivind wrenched at his bonds anew. Odin's bones, he was as weak as a newborn infant. Perhaps it was indeed, as someone had said, Warfesser. Everyone knew what that was, though fighting men never spoke of it openly. It was the ailment a warrior feared above all, for it rendered a man useless, stealing his will to go forward, turning him into a trembling, pathetic husk. He had seen such a one at home in Rogaland, a quivering, weeping wreck who sat in a corner of the drinking hall nursing his ale, shunned even by his own wife. Warfesser robbed a man of his very purpose for living. That Sommerlet had named it was like a curse. It was like setting a darkness on him. He had seen the look of pity and horror on Grimm's amiable features. He had seen revulsion in Erlin's eyes, confusion and shame in Holgar's. It seemed as if Sommerlet was right. For now, Eivind could do nothing but sit here and witness the destruction of what he had vowed to preserve. He watched as the hall burned down to stones and ash. He watched as Sommerlid's men began to march back across the causeway, with the heads of their enemies held up on spears, fresh blood painting the shafts a glowing crimson in the light of morning. Gulls circled, screaming a song of death. After the heads came captives. One or two old greybeards, a few women, no more than 6 or 7. A single glance told him Nessa was not among them. None had her height, her proud carriage, her glossy brown hair. A warrior with a sword herded a gaggle of terrified children. One girl clutched a tiny infant, another shepherded an ancient grandmother hobbling on a stick. Not Lorna. This one had sparse white hair and wisps and stooped shoulders. Nessa. He watched them come. So few, a pathetic few. There were no boys, no young men, no warriors of middle years. Those had come already. Their furious dark eyes and blood-drained faces paraded high on their conqueror's spears. Now there was nothing moving on the whaleback, save the drifting smoke from smouldering buildings and the white dots of sheep on the sloping pasture beyond the ruined settlement. The men of the folk lay where they had died. There was nobody left to gather their headless bodies up. Sommerlid's warriors streamed back across the causeway, not silent now, but jubilant. It was a great victory. On the shore below Eivind, the captives now stood in a tight group, ashen-faced. The infants squalled shrilly. The children sobbed in terror. The women were quite silent. He saw Sommerlid down on the beach, lifted high on the shoulders of his men, arm raised in gesture of triumph. They were setting the heads in line along the pathway, driving the spears hard into the unyielding earth. The curve of the shore was fringed with them. The eyes of these dead warriors fixed westward, toward the place where the last king of the folk had fought his last, brief battle. Someone thrust a spear into the earth by Eivind's side. Despite himself, he looked up. Atop the shaft, the severed head of Angus's son, Kinnart, was set, fierce-eyed, grim-jawed. So young, too young.
"Well, Eivind."
Sommerlid was standing on his other side, expression mildly amused.
"A pity you missed that. A fine battle, if all too easily won. But I'm afraid I have some sad news for you."
The gag smothered the words of fury that Eivind would have shouted. The sound he made was the bellow of a beast in pain.
"Now, my old friend, hold still and keep quiet, will you? You're making my guards quite nervous, thrashing about and roaring like that. I think they're still mindful of ghost warriors and witch hounds, even though you've manifested in flesh and blood. Easy now. You're not well. Anyone can see that."
"Tell me. Tell me." He tried to convey with his eyes what he could not say. Not that there was any doubt Sommerlid understood. Sommerlid was simply playing again. There was a little smile on his lips.
"Very unfortunate. We accounted for the sun."
He glanced upward.
"The young fool thought himself a warrior, but these folk have limited skills in the field. He didn't last long.
I'd hoped Engus would come out and face me, but he chose to stay in the hall, and I'm afraid the young woman I mentioned before was by his side, loyal to the end. It was impressive, the stuff of a fine tale. I'm told there wasn't a sound from in there, not a scream, not a cry. They perished in silence. Quite dignified, I thought. The pain must have been considerable. It was the ones outside that made all the noise. So she's gone, Avent. I'll be looking elsewhere for a bride. Perhaps it's for the best. Cleaner this way. Complete break. No question whatever of my authority here. Somerled, King of Rosi. That has quite a ring to it, don't you think? Oh, Avent, are those tears I see in your eyes? Oh, they are, my dear fellow. I did not expect such a display of feeling. It is a great victory, I must acknowledge that. Avon let his lids close over his eyes. This grief was bone-deep, earth-deep, beyond words, beyond thought. This rage could not be spoken. It smouldered in the head, making the thoughts a white-hot furnace of hate. This loss flowed in the very veins, scourging the wounded heart until it cried for mercy. But there was no mercy. She was gone. Nessa was gone. And Avent had failed. "Best if we take you somewhere safe, my friend," Somerled said. "Somewhere really safe and really quiet. You need time to recover, time to ponder what's happened and think about your future. Later we'll talk, not now. I think this gag had better stay on until we have you securely locked up, just for your own protection. Wild accusations do make folk angry, and you don't seem to be able to defend yourself any more, poor Avent. A nice long rest in a nice secure room, that will be best. Now, if you'll forgive me, I have things to do. It's not every day one becomes a king." Not so long ago, when Thor had deserted him and he'd lost his will to go on, Avent thought he had plumbed the depths of despair. He had come close to giving up altogether in that dark time. Perhaps that had been the illness Somerled had named, yet Avent did not see it thus, not now. He thought it had been a kind of test, a trial set on him, and because of it he had begun to think clearly and see truly. He had not known the real trial still lay ahead of him. Now hatred gnawed at his belly, grief played tricks in his head. Something else which he could not name made it impossible to do as he had done before, simply curl up in the darkness and flee inside himself. Something kept his mind awake, telling him this was not over yet. Even though he had failed, even though Nessa was gone, even though Somerled had got exactly what he wanted. This time there would be no running away. They had locked him in a cell-like room, whose only light came from chinks in the rock walls, and up under the musty thatch. A storehouse, probably, for there was a sprinkling of grain on the earthen floor, and shelves where sacks might be laid to keep dry. He had heard a heavy bolt being slid across the door. Now and then came men's voices beyond, no more than two, he judged. Somerled must believe him much weakened to set so meagre a watch on him. Everyone knew you could not hold a wolfskin prisoner long. Avent shivered. He had not been much of a wolfskin this morning. He hadn't even wanted to fight, but in the end his flagging strength had been all he had, for the truth had been a poor weapon. Not one of them had believed him. How could men like Erlend and Holger follow Somerled so blindly? Was the thirst for battle so fierce in them that it overwhelmed all sense of what was right and fair? But then, had he not himself charged forward in the forefront of Jarl Magnus's fighting men, and never questioned his enemy's claim to land or goods, or whatever it was the Jarl sought to take from him? Avent sat on the earthen floor, arms around his knees, staring at the wall not two paces before him. It was different. The difference was Magnus himself, a man of good judgment. A man who they had seen arbitrating at the thing and balancing each matter with gravity and rightness. A man who would make his decision only after due and full consideration of all the relevant matters. Magnus could be hard,
He had quashed that rebellion in the East with speed and blood. But he was always fair, and what he did was for the benefit of all his folk in the long term. Magnus was a true leader. Somerled was. He was dangerous, not just to his enemies, but to friends and family, and to all he touched. He was even a danger to himself. Eivind had never forgotten the words of the seer's foretelling. For him, it had been true. In this far place, he had indeed found a treasure beyond price, found her and lost her in one season's span. As for Somerled, the catwoman had seen two paths for him, one leading to kingship and glory, the other shadowed and lonely. It seemed to Eivind it was by no means sure which one of them Somerled followed. But one thing was plain. Somerled must be stopped. He could not be allowed to go on as he had begun here, setting his stamp on land and people until Nessa's folk were entirely destroyed and her fair islands shorn of their ancient mysteries and peaceful beauty. Better no chieftain at all than one who plunges his followers into blind wrongdoing and sets the sword to those who extend the hand of friendship. It grew dark outside. At one point the iron bolt was slid open, and the door widened a crack, and a cautious hand came around with a hunk of bread and a cup of water. Eivind made no move, no sound. The door closed, the bolt slid home. He could endure a night or two in this stinking hole. He still had his wolfskin to shelter him. He had Nessa's gift lying small and warm against his heart. Rushing out blindly, with nothing in his head but the desire to strangle Somerled, was the sort of thing the old Eivind would have done, the sort of thing a wolfskin would do. He was not a wolfskin now. He had a mission. He had given Nessa his word, and he would keep it as best he could. It was too late for her, but somewhere in the islands were the remnants of Angus's people, in hiding here on the mainland, or captive in Somerled settlement, or eking out their living by land and sea on the remoter islands, not knowing yet that their good king was gone forever. Those folk he could warn, them he could protect somehow. He could tell them what Nessa had wished and hoped for them, and he could give them heart. And he could stop Somerled. That part was first. In the dark, Eivind unwrapped the little bundle of cloth, fingers gentle on the narrow ribbon. This she had worn in her hair, her lovely long fall of hair like dark shining silk. He had been bold that day. He could not believe how bold, taking the comb from her hand, drawing it gently through, stroking her hair with his fingers, softly, so she would not know what he did. So close she had been to him, yet quite unaware of the longing in him to wrap his arms around her, to kiss the hollow of her neck, her pale cheek, the sweet curve of her lips. He would not think of how it had been for her at the end, of how she and her uncle had sat quietly in their hall, as the fire came all around them, as the smoke filled their lungs and the heat seared their flesh. He would not think of it. And yet, as his jaw tightened, and the lump came to his throat, and his tears began to flow again, he could not stop thinking of it. Her pain and terror tore at him. Angus's niece. No wonder Somerled had pursued her. Now she was gone, and if Somerled had spoken the truth, the royal line of the folk was ended. He touched the small feather, the moon-white stones. The heartbeat of the islands was not so easily stilled. The ancient beings Nessa had spoken of dwelt yet in the deep places, though their clear-eyed priestess could no longer summon them forth. Beneath his grief, a chill purpose had begun to possess him. This was not finished yet. Sleep was not possible. He made himself lie down on the cold ground, made his body still and quiet, a discipline well practiced in long years of sea voyaging and hastily improvised shelter. His mind he could not set at peace. It showed the images of fire and terror over and over, until he could have howled his anguish aloud, as a wild creature does. He recalled the tale of Níel and Brynjolf, and a blood oath that bound a man to a lifetime of guilt and sorrow. It seemed to Eivind that Níel should never have made the vow at all, knowing Brynjolf far less well than he thought. But having pledged himself, and having done the deed, He should not then have let it go as he had, simply pouring his grief into his songs. He should have challenged Brynjolf, made plain the truth of what he had done. He should have made sure such an ill course of events could never happen again. That was what Eivind would do. It would not make good his own loss. Nothing could ever do that, but it was at least a path of purpose,